And also, please try not to say your name in case I drop this. Confidentiality.
Yeah. Okay.
Rules of research. So we're here today because you are well known around town. You've developed Armory Square and made it a hustling, bustling place that we go nearly every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
The kids love to get milk and Starbucks and then go to the Most and wander around.
Great.
And sort of want to know how did you go about developing this area?
You know, the way I started out with this was a friend of mine, a good friend. His name is George Curry, who teaches at the School of Environmental Science and Forestry. And I were having dinner, and we were discussing the fact that we had both been in Boston in a recent period of time, and how much we loved Boston and how much we loved the city and being in a city. And we were lamenting that we didn't have anything like that in Syracuse. And so we said, I don't know how. When I talk about this, I always kid around and say it was on our second bottle of wine, which it probably was. Mm-hmm. But we said, well, you know, why don't we try to do something about it? And I think that that's the way it started. And we didn't really have any money. I think that we met the true definition of entrepreneur. We had an idea.
Mm-hmm.
We had passion. We didn't have resources. We did not have any money.
Mm-hmm.
But we did have an idea, and we did have passion. And we went and we first needed to decide where to do this, what physical attributes needed to be in place in order to achieve what we wanted to achieve. And in looking at the city, at the time, the Holly Green Street area was an area that was being looked at for revitalization. So we looked over there. We both concluded that it didn't have the same qualities that what is now being called Armory Square. It wasn't Armory Square at the time. It was just a group of buildings had, because it wasn't contiguous to downtown, and it really didn't have the stock of buildings that exists in Armory Square. So that's where we chose to begin our work. And in doing that, we all then realized also that in order to attract capital, which we didn't have any of.
Were you working as a lawyer at that point?
No, I was, let's see, what was I doing at the time? I was in law school at the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
he was a professor.
Mm-hmm. In order to attract capital, we needed to be able to tap into investment tax credits for historic rehabilitation, which were part of the tax law at the time, and were quite generous. But in order to do that, you had to have things designated. So we began by designating this entire district, which is just a lot of spade work. I mean, it was going around, and we would take our Sundays and Saturdays, and we'd go around, we'd catalog all the buildings, and then George would do, and he knew where to get the history of all the properties. So we did all that, and we assembled the entire package, and then we gave it to the downtown committee, and then they spent the money to apply to New York State to have the thing designated. And then we bought a building there called the Labor Temple Building, where Possibilities Restaurant is. And that's the first building we did. And then we continued on and did, we picked off buildings after that. George left me, went back to teaching. Essentially, after that first building, he did a little bit of work on the second one, but not very much. And then I was practicing law at the time and realized that I really couldn't practice law and do development at the same time, because it was just too time consuming. And so I gave up practicing law and I just focused on development. What's interesting when I think back upon this stuff, and maybe it's interesting for the purpose of this interview, is that, and I've talked about this with people, and there was a great First of all, there was a great. I don't really talk about this much because people probably think I'm bullshitting them anyways. But there was a great social. We were trying to do something that would increase community. We were trying to develop a community and add something to Syracuse which would uplift Syracuse, because quite honestly, Syracuse was fairly dismal, particularly downtown. This was in the 60s, you know, after the people started leaving in the 60s, and by the time we got to the place, which was in the 80 something or other, downtown was fairly decimated, you know. I mean, it was, you know, Day Brothers had left, Sibley's had left, and then some of the great old stores that were there originally, you know, the wonderful jewelry store that was there was just magnificent, on the corner of Salina and I forget where it is now, but but anyways, the first floor uses had been pretty much obliterated, and there was no one living, and we were committed from the outset. We were committed to the concept of mixed use. In order to bring these buildings alive 24 hours so that we would have commercial first floors and residents living above. And that's really what our theoretical construct was.
Where did you get that from? Was that
that's
from
Jane, Jane Jacobs. Mm-hmm. You know?
From reading literature.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I credit George with that, because remember, I did not come... I studied... I shouldn't say that. I did study... I was at Rutgers and in urban planning before I came back to Syracuse and went to the Maxwell School. So I did have and I took relevant courses at the Maxwell School also. And so I mean, for whatever worth a semester is at Rutgers Urban Planning School, which was very 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 good school and still is in urban planning, that was my background. George's background was more extensive. I mean, this has been his areas of interest since he began teaching. So he brought some of that with him, and you know, obviously I began reading and studying and all that, but. You know, Jane Jacobs was really the person that really sparked this idea of mixed use, which was of course it was always the pattern of development in our country, but had been written out of the zoning code, right? Because, you know, as zoning became more and more prevalent after in the 1940s and 50s and gained great strength. It was all about separating uses and not integrating uses. So, you know, you're fighting against. We were fighting against the tide in many ways, which included state or federal government assistance. We were fighting against the banks, which didn't know. We'd go to them and say, they would say, "What is this? This is an office building, an apartment mm-hmm. building." They say, "Well, no, it's a mixed use building," mm-hmm. and they would look at us like we were from Mars, you know. They didn't have any experience, and they said, "Well, this doesn't fit into any of our lending categories," you know, that kind of thing. But we were committed to mixed use, and we did not waver from that, which I think is very important that we didn't, because that's what Armory Square is, and that's why, from my opinion, that's why it thrives, is because it's a mixed use development. That's the way. We got started, and that's why we did all this stuff.
Can I ask, were there other places that were using mixed use that you could point to?
No.
How did you convince banks?
No.
Nobody else?
I'll tell you a true, humorous, mm-hmm. and true story. Mm-hmm. We had applied to Citibank at the time, which had a presence here, and we were going along swimmingly. We had put together a partnership, and we were going to attract investors who were going to get investment tax credits, and we were somewhere in the middle of the process, at three quarters of the process. No, not that far. Probably in the middle of the process, when the banker called us in and said, "You know, I failed to tell you this, but we need to have a marketing study." And I said, "Well, why do you need a marketing?" Well, he said, "You know, just part of our due diligence. We need a marketing study." I said, if we do a marketing study, it's going to say that there is no market, and therefore you're not going to lend us the money. I said, so we can't do a marketing study. And I don't know why. Uh-huh. I don't know why he let us off the hook for that. I really don't. But he let it slide. He just didn't require us to do it. Because in point of fact, that's what it would have said. Because weren't any examples of what we were doing.
Yeah.
And for the most part, you know, whether marketing is based upon most of these marketing studies, the one he was probably looking for was something that somebody would go around and they would look for comparables. It's almost like an appraisal. Now, you could have been more sophisticated and done focus groups. I'm not sure that would have helped us either.
Yeah.
I don't think that would have helped us, because people would have said, well, you can't. I mean, who wants to live downtown? I mean, who? I don't want to, you know. I mean, unless you statistically wound up with some people who had lived in other cities or, you know, appreciated the concept, which I think would have been really hard to do.
Yeah.
They were going to say, what, are you crazy? You know, you can't do that. You can't have people living downtown, because at the time, you know, this was a place that was populated by SROs, single room occupancy hotels, prostitutes, pimps, drug addicts. You know, it was an unsavory area. I mean, the buildings were blighted. They were empty. You know, I mean, we had insurance problems because the buildings around us were empty.
Yeah.
And they were fearful of fire.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was really an interesting. It was a very interesting thing. The banker who actually helped us out was, in a few years later, was indicted for embezzlement. But that guy, but he's the guy. Without him, we wouldn't have gotten the loan, and we wouldn't have been able to demonstrate that this could work.
Was he convicted?
They reached a settlement, and he paid it back, and blah blah blah, and he went on his way. But yeah, the guy that we were involved with was, yeah, he was embezzling like large sums of money, actually. It's a very interesting point you bring up about that issue about mixed use, and I think that you know, again, I was gonna say that from and looking back on it, I mean, this was an entrepreneurial exercise, pure and simple. It really was. I think that this is what is what defines entrepreneurism, right? And I think that what separates entrepreneurism from dreaming, which I think a lot of people do and have a lot of ideas about things, is the action step. You know, and the action step, and it's the willingness to take the action step and the willingness to sacrifice. That's the thing. You know, if my wife was sitting right here beside me, I would tell you, and I would tell you, even if you know she's not, but the amount of sacrifice that she did as a wife of me was tremendous. It was unbelievable, because we were at risk, and I put us at risk, and we didn't have any. It was no like big safety net for me. You know, it wasn't. I mean, I had this idea, and it was a burning passion of mine, and I was committed to doing it.
Yeah.
But if I had failed, we would have been screwed for a while. I mean, we would have recovered, and I was not like I was an attorney, and I would have gone back to working as an attorney, and we would have been fine. But I think that it would have hurt us. No, there's no question about it. So I think it's the willingness to do that, to take the action step and to be willing to persevere. I think that that's what entrepreneurism is. There's a lot about that. You know.
Well, that's interesting that you bring that up, because there was I've been reading a lot about entrepreneurship lately, and one person, they start out their quote, "I can trace my divorce back to the years that I spent as an entrepreneur."
Right. Yeah. Well, I understand that, and I don't. You know, I credit my wife for something that she saw, and I don't know whether I was able to show it to her, but I mean, I thank God that she stuck with me, because It was hard. It was very, very hard.
What types of, this is actually a line of research that I was have put grant money in,
yeah.
a grant proposal in,
yeah.
to study, you know, how does it affect family life? What types of things? Is it just the risk, or did she have career or
it's,
family
no,
sacrifices?
It's the risk. It's worrying about, you know, our daily expenses, our monthly expenses, you know, of not having the money, of, you know, waiting till these properties got rented up. You know, there's a terrible period of time, you know, when you... It's hard to be a developer with one building.
Mm.
Very difficult. And it's hard to be a developer with one small building. It's even more difficult.
Because
mm-hmm. There isn't a lot of income in the first place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you got to rent it all up. And that took time because of the condition, of, you know, where we were located.
Mm-hmm.
So... You know, all of those things contributed to, you know, a tenuous financial picture here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't have somebody who was going to write me a check every 2 weeks or every week.
Mm-hmm,
I wasn't
mm-hmm.
getting that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's hard.
Did she have to change work? Was she working?
She was working. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank mm-hmm. God. Mm-hmm. You know, she was working as a therapist, mm-hmm. as a psychotherapist. So. And we had one daughter at the time,
mm-hmm.
you know, so... You know, and so looking back on it, there was a lot of sacrifice involved, and I think that unless people are involved.